And that is going to be page 500, Psalm 130. And we're going to read verses 1 through 8 this morning. Page 500, Psalm 130. So let's sing it. Let's don't sing it. Let's read it loudly and with exuberance and enthusiasm. 130th Psalm, beginning in verse 1, and we're going to read the entire psalm. Out of the depths I cry to you, O Lord. Lord, hear my voice. Let your ears be attentive to the voice of my supplications. If you, O Lord, should mark iniquities, Lord, who could stand? But there is forgiveness with you, so that you may be revered. I wait for the Lord. My soul waits, and in his word I hope. My soul waits for the Lord more than those who watch for the morning, more than those who watch for the morning. O Israel, hope in the Lord. For with the Lord there is steadfast love, and with him is great power to redeem. It is he who will redeem Israel from all its iniquities. Thank you so much. You can be seated. You know, I have shared this with you before, so this is not news. Waiting is not my strong suit. I don't do good with waiting. And I am always reminded of that weekly when I go to Costco to get gas. I wait while people sit blocking the whole place because they want to pull up to a lane that is on the same side as their little gas door. I wait while someone fumbles through their wallet or their purse looking for their credit card. I wait while they run the incorrect card 3 or 4 times before they realize I'm using the wrong card. I wait while they sit in their car talking in their phone, on their phone, even though the gas pump is no longer pumping gas into their car. I wait behind the car who cannot pass the car in front because they have parked in such a way to block off the whole lane. I wait, frustrated, talking to myself, telling them what they ought to do, telling them, calling them all kinds of names. I wait. They're not bad names, they're just true names. But when I think of two of the characters in the story of Christmas, Zacharias and his wife Elizabeth, and the period of waiting that they went through, I realize that my short time of waiting at the gas pump at Costco is very immaterial. We read of them in the Gospel of Luke, the first chapter, beginning in verse 5, where it says, "In the days of King Herod of Judea, there was a priest named Zechariah, who belonged to the priestly order of Abijah. His wife was a descendant of Aaron, and her name was Elizabeth. Both of them were righteous before God, living blamelessly according to all the commandments and regulations of the Lord. But they had no children, because Elizabeth was barren, and both were getting on in years." All those years of waiting, all those years of praying, all those years of reminding themselves that Elizabeth was not the first woman who was barren, that Sarah was barren, that Rachel was barren, that there were other women that they could look back in their genealogy and their heritage and say, well, God did it for Sarah. And God did it for Rachel. Why would not God do it for Elizabeth? They waited, praying that God would do a miracle in their lives. They waited through years of obeying the commandments and regulations of the Lord. They waited while living blamelessly. They waited through all the disappointments, through all the tears, through all the questions, through all the anger, through all the self-examination. They waited. They waited while many of the other women whispered and made comments about Elizabeth and about her husband, Zechariah. They waited through all of that, year after year, month after month, week after week, day after day. Every time Elizabeth went to the well to draw water, every time Elizabeth went to the market, every Sabbath when they would go to the temple or to the synagogue to observe Shabbat, all of the waiting, all of enduring the looks, the sneers, the gossip. You know, waiting is a very good teacher. I love what Bob Hope said about waiting. Someone asked him, how did he learn to dance? And he said this, I grew up with six brothers, and that is how I learned to dance, waiting for the bathroom. But on a much more serious note, the late Billy Graham said this about waiting. Each life is made up of mistakes and learning, of waiting and growing, of practicing patience and being persistent. So what are some lessons that we can learn this Advent season about waiting? Well, first of all, in waiting, we learn the depths of our faithfulness. It would have been very easy for Elizabeth and Zechariah to just quit. It would have been very easy for them to just pout. It would have been very easy for them to just say, you know, all these years of serving God and obeying the commandments and living righteously, look what it's done for us. We've got nothing out of it. All these years of praying and asking God to give us a child, and God's failed us. Been very easy for them to have taken on a victim mentality. It'd been very easy for them to have spent their whole time telling others about all they've gone through and all they've suffered and how bad it's been and how difficult it's been for them. But I love what Luke said about Zechariah in Luke 1, beginning of verse 8. Said, once when Zechariah's division was on duty and he was serving as priest before God, he was chosen by lot, according to the custom of the priesthood, to go into the temple of the Lord and burn incense. I know I read it kind of quickly, but I hope you caught that phrase where it said that he was serving as priest before God. In spite of all the years of waiting, in spite of all their disappointment, in spite of all the tears, in spite of all the unanswered prayers, in spite of all they had gone through waiting and waiting and waiting, Zechariah and Elizabeth had made a decision. And the decision was this: we may have to let go of our dream, but we will not let go of God. We may have to put that dream we had of having a family, of having a child, we may have to put that on the back burner. We may have to put that on the shelf. We may have to say, well, maybe it wasn't God's will for us to have a child. But we're not going to let go of God. And that is one of the things I see often happening when people go through a period of waiting. They become frustrated. They become aggravated. They become angry with God. They become angry with the church. And they decide, you know what? I'm through with it. I'm through with it. It's done me no good. All this waiting has done me no good. In fact, we see something similar to that written by one of the writers of Lamentation. In the third chapter, beginning of verse 20, he said this, speaking of God, He has filled me with bitter herbs and given me gall to drink. He has broken my teeth with gravel. He has trampled me in the dust. I have been deprived of peace. I have forgotten what prosperity is. So I say, my splendor is gone, and all that I had hoped from the Lord. I remember my affliction and my wandering, the bitterness and the gall. I will remember them, and my soul is downcast within me. Hear what he said? I'm going to focus the rest of my life on my disappointment. I'm going to focus the rest of my life on what I didn't get, on how bad my life was, on what I wasn't privileged to have, on how my life started out, or how my life began, or how my life turned out. I'm going to focus on that. That's going to be my life story. That's going to be my badge. That's going to be what I carry with me and share with others. I have my billfold with me. I found out apparently I'm really old. I was on the phone this past a couple weeks ago with someone about a Medicare Advantage plan, and I said, well, let me get my billfold. And the young man on the other end said, what is that? But in my billfold, right on this side, I carry a picture. It's my favorite picture of me and Sherry. You can't see it, but she's got on a light blue sweater and a white blouse, and I'm wearing a white shirt and blue jeans, and the sun is not hitting my bald head. And she's kind of leaning into me. And I don't know when this picture was made, but this is my favorite picture, and it's always in my wallet. So when somebody says to me, well, do you have a picture of Sherry? I always pull it out, and I put my finger over me and say, there she is. For some people, when they pull out the wallet of their life, they pull out the picture of what they didn't get. They pull out the picture of their disappointment, their pain, their I don't understand why this happened to me. That's what they pull out, and that's what they talk about. And that becomes the frame for all of their life, is my disappointment and what I didn't get and what I waited for, and God did not come through for me. And that's what the writer of Lamentations said. He said, I remember my affliction and my wandering, the bitterness and the gall. I will remember them. And I've met people who were living out the life of bitterness and gall because that is what they choose to remember. But Zechariah and Elizabeth chose to not remember that. They chose to remember that we may have not received what we wanted. Our life may have not turned out the way we envisioned it. This may not have been the dream we had, but we are not going to let go of God. We are going to continue to serve God, to be faithful. We're going to continue to give praise to God, to worship God, because they understood that waiting has the potential to make you better, but it also has the potential to make you bitter. And nothing good ever comes from allowing bitterness to become part of your life. It's very easy to focus upon why do they have what I want. Why are they happy and I'm not? Why did they get that and I did not? Why is their family all together and my family is not? Why are they all, everybody's just all getting along and they look like they could be a Publix commercial and my family looks like a Winn-Dixie commercial? Or maybe even a Hoggly Woggly. Why? It's very important for us to remember. And one of my favorite books in the Old Testament is the book of Ruth, where Naomi and her two sons or her husband go to a foreign land because of a famine. And while they're in that foreign land, her two sons marry. And also while they're in that foreign land, her husband and both her sons die. She decides to go back home to Bethlehem, and on the way, one of her daughter-in-laws decides, I want to stay home, but one of them stayed, Ruth, stayed with her mother-in-law. And as Naomi and Ruth are coming into the little village of Bethlehem, the women are there, and they're all saying to each other, "Isn't that Naomi? That's Naomi." And Naomi said to them, "Do not call me Naomi," which means beautiful. "Call me Mara," which means bitter. She described herself. She said, "I went out full, but I came back empty." Don't let waiting on God, don't let that period of time, don't let bitterness and envy and jealousy and anger creep into your heart. Secondly, in waiting, not only do we learn the depth of our trust, not only do we learn the depth of our faithfulness, but we also learn the depth of our trust. It is one thing to say, "I trust in God," but it is a far different thing when you're in that situation where you are called upon to trust Him. Micah, the 7th chapter, beginning of verse 5, said this, "Do not trust a neighbor. Put no confidence in a friend. Even with the woman who lies in your embrace, guard the words of your lips, for a son dishonors his father. A daughter rises up against her mother, a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. A man's enemies are the men of his own household." But then Micah said this, after laying out that horrible picture, he said this, "But as for me, I watch in hope for the Lord. I wait for God my Savior. My God will hear me." The psalmist, 130th Psalm, verse 5, wrote these words, "I wait for the Lord. My whole being waits, and in His word I put my trust." Paul said this in Romans 8:25, "But if we wait for what we do not see, we wait for it with patience." I want you to notice with me in Luke, again, the first chapter, what Elizabeth did when she found out that she was pregnant. Verse 24. "After those days, his wife Elizabeth conceived, and for 5 months she remained in seclusion. She said, 'This is what the Lord has done for me when he looked favorably on me and took away the disgrace I have endured among my people.'" I wonder how much disgrace Elizabeth suffered at the hands of her people. You see, there will always be somebody who, if they find out you're going through a period of waiting and they find out what it's about, there will be someone who has a horror story that they feel compelled to share with you. "Well, let me tell you what happened to my Uncle Jim. He was in the same situation you are." And then they tell the bad news. "Let me tell you what happened to my sister. Let me tell you what happened to my cousin. They were in the same situation, very similar to what you're in. Let me tell you what happened to them." And they unload, they spill out all that doubt and unbelief and bitterness and anger that they're carrying. I don't know how much disgrace Elizabeth must have endured at the hands of her people. But it was so much disgrace that she even said, "God has taken away the disgrace I have endured among my people." I think she understood this one thing about waiting, and it is this: hope is not based on what I'm waiting for, but it is based on who I am waiting on. We get the focus on what we're waiting for rather than the focus on who we're waiting on. And Elizabeth understood that it wasn't a baby she was waiting for. It was God that she was waiting on. The third thing we find out in waiting is that in waiting, our patience has opportunity to grow and to develop. You and I choose, will I wait in frustration or will I wait in faith? Will I wait in frustration, or will I wait in faith? I find that when I am impatient, I have a tendency to sigh, you know, sort of like, and Sherry, if she hears that, the first words out of her mouth is, "What's wrong?" I also have a tendency to mutter, to kind of talk under my breath, you know, because I'm impatient. I'm impatient with that person that's in front of me. I'm impatient with the rain 3 Sundays in a row. I'm impatient with when things aren't going my way. I grow impatient and I mutter and I, Listen to what David said, Psalm 40, verse 1. I waited patiently for the Lord. He turned to me and he heard my cry. I waited patiently for the Lord. It was also the admonition of the Apostle Paul in Romans chapter 5. He said, and not only so, but we glory in tribulations also, because we know that tribulation works patience. And patience, experience, and experience, hope. The writer of Hebrews said this in chapter 10, verse 23. Let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, for he who promised is faithful. And then James chapter 1, beginning in verse 2. My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. But then the very next verse, he said this, and let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. Waiting always gives my patience the opportunity to grow, the opportunity to develop, the opportunity to mature. Think of how your children helped work patience into your life. Think of how you have helped work patience into the lives of others. Think about others who have brought about patience, or at least have shown you the need of patience in your own life. And when I'm waiting on the Lord, when I'm saying, God, this is what I want, this is what we need, this is what I desire, and I'm praying and I'm presenting it to Him, and I'm presenting it to Him from my point of view, which I assume is correct, and I'm telling Him why I need this and how good it's going to be and what I need, and yet He allows me to wait. There's been several times over our marriage that I've said to Sherry, wouldn't you like for us to have a dog? Think about having a dog. And you know what she tells me? She says, like she would have said this morning, who's going to walk the dog today? And then she follows it up with, not me. So she reminds me that maybe what I'm waiting for, I need a little more patience, that I'm not ready for what I'm waiting for. You know, I'm sure that when Zachariah and Elizabeth were younger, they thought, well, now's when we need a baby. We need a baby now while we're young and we can all grow together and we can, you know, experience life together and we can enjoy having this baby and watching him grow up and you know, we'll be young enough that we won't have to, you know, it'll just be so easy. And now they're old. And now God says, this is the time. And it helps us realize that God's timing is not our timing. If we were writing the story, we would have said, and when Elizabeth was 23 and Zechariah was 24, they had John the Baptist. But that's not the way the story goes. The story goes that before God even answered, it said that Elizabeth was barren and they were both advanced in years. Patience creates faithfulness. Henry Nouwen said this about waiting: to wait with openness and trust is an All right, here we go. I may have to come to get you to read it, Ken. To wait with openness and trust is an enormous... Shoot. Come here, Ken. Read the bold print. I'll pick it up from there.
I got my glasses.
Oh, I can read it. I just can't get my tongue around it.
To wait with openness and trust is an enormously radical attitude toward life. It is choosing to hope that something is happening for us that is far beyond our own imagining. It is giving up control over our future and letting God define our life. It is living with the conviction that God molds us in love, holds us in tenderness, and moves us away from the sources of our fear.
Thank you. Next time I'm just going to say it's a big radical attitude. I love that line, though, where he says, it is giving up control over our future and letting God define our life. That's what waiting's about. It's about saying, God, I'm going to let go of my dream. I'm going to let go of my hope. I'm going to let go of what I feel I deserve, what I should have, what I think would make me happy. And I'm going to trust you. I'm going to let you define trust and patience and faithfulness in my life. So the question I ask as we close is this: are you in a period of waiting today? Maybe you're waiting to get better. Maybe you're waiting to feel better. Maybe you're waiting till all the tests are over and you know what's happening. Maybe you're waiting on your life to improve. Maybe you're waiting on your finances to get better. Maybe you're waiting on that dream that you've held on to for years to finally be fulfilled. Maybe you're waiting on that child to pick up the phone and call. You're waiting. Whatever you're waiting on today, I would say this to you. Advent reminds us that in all of our lives, regardless of who we are, like Elizabeth and Zechariah, in all of our times, there come periods of waiting when God is silent. And yet we believe that even in those times, God may be silent, but God is working. Heavenly Father, we thank you that even though we don't like it, and even though we, rather than enjoy it, we endure it, you call each of us at times to go through seasons of waiting. Waiting on things to change. Waiting on things to get better. Waiting for that relationship to be mended. Waiting for our body to be healed. Waiting for the future to look better. Waiting for our strength to come back. Waiting for us to be able to do the things that we have envisioned doing and are unable to do right now. But Lord, as we wait, we trust. Our expectancy, our hope, our confidence is in you. And so we wait. But we wait, Lord, on you, not on the thing, but on you. And we give you thanks now. Would you stand with me this morning as we prepare to close? You don't need your hymnal for this next hymn. If you want to look at it, that's fine, but you don't need it. We're going to sing Emmanuel. Let's sing it.